Hello and welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. My name's Chris Fletcher and I'm your host. Tech on Toast exists to connect hospitality to technology. Search for your best problem-solving tech on our marketplace, listen to both operators and tech experts on our podcast, or just meet up with the brilliant people who are helping innovate the hospitality industry as we enter a new era. Welcome to Tech on Toast. The Tech on Toast podcast is brought today by Point One. Point One offers the complete EPOS system for your hospitality business. From mobile order and pay and self-serve kiosks to restaurant and kitchen management, Point One has the solution. Head over to their website today to find out more and get in touch with their experienced team. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the next episode of Tech on Toast podcast. And this week, we're delighted to be joined by James Brown. How do I introduce you today? Founder of Tipjar and Managing Director of Brewdog Bars? Or are you...
No, there's those things, both titles have changed. I discovered really early on that I was the founder of Tipjar, but actually Ben and Paul, who came on board, we agreed they were going to co-found us.
Right, okay.
I probably naively held on to that founder title a bit too long.
Just don't change your email, no one will notice.
And the reality was that the business wouldn't be anything without those two people, so we became co-founders.
Co-founders. And, I'm a co-founder.
And my job in BrewDog's changed also. I'm now CEO of Bars Globally, so
CEO,
and times change.
My team were happily sharing with me on Slack yesterday in Atollo. They were sharing me a news clipping from BrewDog expanding worldwide. I mean, I already thought you had the world, but yeah. Apparently you're doing some more. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a busy... busy 5 years ahead for BrewDog. I think we have our sights on multiple markets around the world, from China to India. We've got a lot of exciting stuff happening in India, to be honest.
It's lucky you've only got one job then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a challenge sometimes.
Be careful what you wish for. Yeah. So and you've had a family. Like, oh, yeah.
You were busy, and you decided to unpick the hardest problem in the world, which was tipping. It's literally like, it's just so incredibly complex.
I mean, look, and this dates back.
I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, by the way.
It
seemed like a really good thing to crack into, but I was like, oh, when you actually peel back the curtain, it's quite complicated. But yeah.
It really is. And I think what's interesting about Tipjar is, and we I think it was 2000. Was it 2019? It was pre-pandemic, wasn't it? We did the event in Tanner's Yard in down in Bermondsey.
It was pre-pandemic, wasn't it?
And I remember we were introducing WageStream, DeliverAct actually. That was their first UK event. It was Zong talking, and then you were there as well. I remember putting out your little tent cards on the table before the start. And and that was the first time. What stage were you at there?
In a good way, from anyone that's building a product, developing it, if you're not embarrassed by the first iteration, it worked, right? It was a really basic version of what we do now. But so what position we are there? So I suppose to go back to the origin story of like where Tipjar came from my entire career, tips have been a part of my life, right? So I was a bartender. The first tip I ever got, I used to peel potatoes in a chip shop in Scotland, and it was in the back room while painting the sob story here.
I've seen the chippy on slides. Yeah.
So the chippy and like the back room, like the light flickered. So you either had the light on flickering or off. So I ended up choosing to have it off in a dark room, and my job was to peel potatoes. So get the violins out. But it was a great job. I got paid.
No one's feeling sorry for you.
Yeah. I got paid £1.82 an hour. And literally my job was to peel potatoes, put them in a bucket and wheel them out front. And the only time I'd see daylight would be wheel them out the front. I'd just enjoy that bit and I'd like go out at busy times. Like after 2 weeks of doing that, I got like an envelope with a bread envelope with James written on it, and had a £5 note in it, and I was a millionaire because I went to my parents, they paid for everything. Yeah. I didn't have to worry about any bills, and on top of the wages I already had, I had a £5 note, and from that I'd never actually given a tip before. And I'd obviously made my parents Scottish, so maybe that's just indicative of the nation. But I'd never really seen one really being given before. I'd probably grown up in the world of like Coronation Street and EastEnders. My mom was a fan of like, oh, it was one for yourself. There was those bar scenes where it's like someone got, oh, one for yourself, one for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a common in our culture. I think often people say, oh, we don't tip in the UK, and that's not true.
We have the money, please. Yeah.
There's billions of pounds of tips in the UK, but like the one for yourself thing is quite common in our culture, especially in pub.
I think bar culture. I grew up in pubs, so I started my career, and that was definitely one on for yourself.
Yeah.
But you never really know what to do with it.
Well, now it's really hard because it's like £7 a pint, right? So you're like, do I just take seven?
Are you sure?
Do I take £7 off this guy or not? I suppose the origin of like tips, which is always part of my life. I grew up in I ended up being a bartender in a bar in Glasgow, and like it was really busy bar day and night. Great place to learn your trade, cocktail bar. We got loads of tips, and it was like all in a big, it was all coins, predominantly a couple of flash arrows with some notes every now and again. And it was all in a bucket behind the bar, and the process was really nice. Busy weeks, we'd do it on like sometimes daily, depending on what the the team wanted to, oh, let's, I need money tanks, we're going out, yeah, let's all split the tips now, and it'd be a half week or whatever. But predominantly it was a Sunday night, people sit around, have a beer and do the tips. And what was really nice about that process was, even if you weren't working on the Sunday night, your friends are working, and it was kind of crowdsourced, crowd checked, if that makes sense. And occasionally, if you were kind of like gone home early, or you'd cold and sick, whatever it might be, or you'd had a holiday, you'd maybe get your tips in 5p coins as a bit of a wind up. But like, it was all fair. It was all like kind of fair, kind of and fun last. But there was a kind of real trusted process about that. And so that, as tips of culture, it is as a worker and a tipped worker. And then I became a manager, and it became on the radar, and people would moan about tips, or they'd say, I've not got enough, or I'm going to go work there because tips are more. And it was always on the agenda. Then there was obviously, as I got into area managers positions and like a kind of higher responsibility, it became like a financial compliance issue. It was like security issue. It was just about tips getting stolen or whatever it might be, or or fairness of practices and stuff like that in any business I worked in. And it was always on the agenda. So I kind of felt really close to the issue. And I suppose where Tip Jar came from, after growing up with tips being such an important part of my life, and people who worked for me's life, it was when BrewDog opened their 67th location in Canary Wharf. We hadn't opened in a kind of financial district before, and we wanted to be fun about the whole process and kind of make fun of the bankers a little bit, and like engage them and do PR stuff around that. So we accepted Bitcoin across the bar for the first time. At the time, this was like 2016, by the way. So at the time, our CFO and IT director didn't want to hold on to the Bitcoin money. I really wish we had, because it'd been a much better position.
Might have been a good plan.
Not that many people paid for it, but people did. And we also linked the beer price to the stock exchange, so that if you had a good day in the market, you paid a little bit more. And if you had a bad
first
day,
version of dynamic pricing.
I think that's coming for us, but I think airline and hotel pricing is coming for us, and I'd like to see more of it. Yeah, so we did fund sovereign payments, and because we're right opposite Barclays Bank, literally the office door is like across the road from BrewDog's front door, and it's like we're almost like the unofficial common room for Barclays. And they were you remember the advert when you're younger, like them sliding down the slide, the contactless thing, were pioneers. Yeah. So we were like, oh, we'll go cashless because it's across the Barclays. But we just did fun, PR-able, interesting stuff around payments because of financial district. And we saw, as an operator, I saw like so many benefits. So silly stuff like you didn't have a Power Ranger turning up in a stab-proof vest and a visor and a giant
suit. Great for the customer experience,
isn't it? Yeah, it's awful, right? You just set your bookings down, you got your candles lit, the atmosphere's on point, and the guy walks in with a giant yellow briefcase and a visor on and thinks, oh, rob me. That costs money, so you got rid of that. And it costs vibe and atmosphere, doesn't it, as well? And that's probably more important. No key stuck in the safe at 3 a.m. and like insurance was lower. Transactions term was lower.
Bloody office faster. Managers sat in the office zedding.
Doing the end of day stuff is like you're counting 5p's. Like even when I was a manager, like we used to call it the 5p finger, where you'd go, like you see it and go, yeah, that's like £2.50. You just
I think it says a lot about my career. I only worked in one site where I don't, you know, like the note counter. Had one of them, and that I literally felt like I made it then. I felt like I made it.
I didn't trust my. I used to work in places with cocktail bars, and they were all the notes were sticky, and like it was like when you do the cash counter, it was like it just didn't quite work. But yeah, so like you didn't have managers, and the upside of a manager not being in the office counting 5p's and 2p's was that they were actually out front supervising close down. Close down was better. As an operator, I'm kind of particularly OCD about fridges being faced up in the morning, caddy, like if you've got like napkins at your service stations. And like, we actually saw an increase. We actually rolled out across 10 sites, and we saw a benefit of lunch trade, because predominantly we're an after work, wet led business. But actually having a really good close down meant that we were much better prepared and organized for lunch times, and we were more efficient at that process, and we end up kind of benefiting us there as well. So all these benefits, literally I could talk probably the whole podcast about going cashless, and this is pre-COVID and all the noise that went on there. And the one downside was cash tips disappeared. Like literally went from something to nothing like overnight. And
is that a cultural thing, do you think? Is that because in the US, do you think that's the same? As in, like, so you operate in the US, and I know, both with BrewDog and Tipjar. But are they tipping over there in cash? And is it because I was talking to Charles from Paytronix, and he was telling me how far behind they still take your credit card, wander off, and do the and come back. You know, and he said it's crazy. Thing.
I think they definitely tip, and they definitely tip in cash. The credit card process is just a bit laborious, right? And like,
very.
You think about the amount of steps taken by an American server that just takes a bit of paper and collects that bit of paper. It's just like, collectively across that many people,
it blows my mind.
Imagine imagine the rubber and the shoes you could save by not having to do that. Like, literally, the shoe you should short the shoe industry and Adidas and Nike if that happened, if they fix that. The small amount, like, it wasn't small, it was a significant amount of money. So often people who don't work in the industry don't realize it, but getting a fiver at the end of the night, liquid cash, as a bartender, and that's a small amount of money, it could go up, it could be higher than that, is a significant impact on your life. And Ben, my co-founder, talked about, he was a bartender in the Long Island Iced Tea Shop in Leicester Square area, and when he was younger, and he had a young family, and he basically went out to work at night, worked during the day, and all the he used to ask for his tips in coins because he could put it in his meter at night. So these things, like, to keep his lights on, right? So for me, it was about going out and getting pissed because I had the luxury of doing that. And it was about, I used to live off my tips and save my wages. So I went to Australia for like 6 weeks I just happened to live off my tips and pay my rent off everything of cash, and then be able to go with my wages and book a big ticket, like a ticket to Australia.
It's huge, isn't it? And I think that's what maybe people forget about, because I used to have a Pringles jar. I worked for Forte in Regent's Park down here, my first ever job. And is it called the Strand Palace? Used to be in Leicester Square. The Forte staff used to live upstairs on the top two floors. God, it was horrific. Before the times of phones or anything. But I used to live up the same thing. Had a Pringles jar. I used to stuff it with notes every time I got it. Never touched my wages. Not that there were many to touch. Yeah. But, you know, lived off that. And I think it's a key thing that people outside the industry don't really get it, or don't really understand the impact they can have.
Yeah, and I think that, like, going home with a fiver in your pocket, or paying your tube ride home, or even paying a taxi home, it's the difference for people. And like, and when, no matter what people do with it, it's like, well, I always come back to tipping, and believe it or not, people talk to me about tipping a lot.
And
I'm like the Larry David.
Just give JB a miss. Actually, I think he's staying in.
And it's like, it's just like, it makes a real difference to people's lives. And I think that I'm really passionate about it. And I think that, like, when you think about, if you ran a bank and you ran an accountant, whatever the industry you might be, even footballers have goal scoring bonuses.
Yeah.
Like, it is the original and best bonus scheme for workers.
It really is.
And I think for hospitality workers, and I think that process of, like, having skin in the game for the employee, and with our customers at TipJar, we see productivity increase, retention increase, even things like sickness increase. We've got customers in Germany where sickness is quite prevalent in Germany because the government have got really good advanced sick pay, where any worker gets six weeks paid off a year, so they can have 6 weeks of paid time off for sickness. And but when tips aren't included in that pay, so it actually encourages people not to take that and to be present at work, because the value of a tip is so high. And so there's loads of benefits to the business as well as the employees. It's important.
And I mean, because you've obviously cashless, you kind of in the game already, so it triggered you into this. Yeah. But I suppose you're an operator by trade, right? That's your background.
You
fix stuff, don't you?
Yeah,
what we do, right? We just fix stuff.
When you run any kind of hospitality venue as a general manager, and I say to my managers now, like, there is no more difficult job than what, like, and you have to be an expert in everything.
Yeah.
And you have to know about fire alarm codes and CCTV operation to,
and then spin
Instagram
into a complaint about a gluten-free dish. You know, it's just
allergen expert, like, general managers, like general practitioner, you have to know, like, a lot of everything.
I actually think it's one of our downfalls. We'll talk about people a bit later, but actually the fact that we do have an amazing skill set, like people who work in this industry. I know, God, people talk about it so negatively a lot, but you might have noticed my boys just started working.
Yeah,
He's doing some weekend stuff for.
He's got invited back as well.
He's back. Back there on Saturday. Yeah. First name on the team sheet now. He's telling me, but he got a tip. Weirdly, and it made me laugh because I said to him, I said, I'm doing that with JV next week, talking about tipping, and he got a tip off a chap. He gave him 50p, and he said to him, look, I just wanted to give you this. Forget the amount. I just wanted to say I was in your shoes. 15 years ago, it's where I started, and now I run. This is my event. He said, I own the whole thing. I run this. This is my gig. Oh. And he said, so I just wanted to say to you, forget the amount. Just keep doing what you're doing. Your service is really nice. And I was just like, that's Shay. On your first day, that is huge.
I'm getting a bit emotional. I am like
And you're a dad now. It's coming for you, mate.
I'm hospitality. Like, I love the industry, and where people can encourage people to stay or join for even 5 or 10 years and be part of this industry is amazing.
I think that's what people have forgotten. It's that the sidebar gig that people can do, join in. Like the reason I joined was a part-time thing. The reason you joined, I don't know, you know, you went to it from your chip shop.
Yeah, you know,
it just depends what route you take into it. But I've met loads of lawyers, barristers, graphic designers, you name them, people who thought they were going to change the world have ended up running great bars all over the country. So yeah. I think it's just people need to open their eyes a little bit. So as I was alluding to anyway, so you found cashless, you were ahead of the game, obviously, in terms of BrewDog.
From a PR perspective, yeah. So we almost had a glimpse into the future of what I've had, of the benefits. And actually the story, it was this, so the story there goes from, I realized how important tips were. I realized it was a problem, but there was all these benefits. I was like, well, surely there's a product to solve this. I looked at the market, no one had done. I was like, well,
I'll have a go with no experience.
The story follows of how naive I was in the process. So had a bit of savings, convinced like a digital agency that I kind of knew, a friend of a friend, to build an app
right
that scanned a QR code and took a tip. Cost me just over 10 grand plus loads of time and effort and energy on it, and it immediately went in the bin. Like literally
apps
immediately
are the devil.
Yeah, exactly. So I discovered two things really painfully. Sometimes I realize a good investment, maybe, but I wish I'd maybe just thought a bit harder about it and not spend the money. But two things I learned were, one, the customers don't want to do anything different. Some do, enough do that there's a small business in it, but you want to scale, you need to be in the flow of what happens. And the second thing is that taking the transaction is really easy. It's like an e-commerce site. It's like an easy process. And the magic of QR codes came and went multiple times, and people even
like Madonna.
Even grandparents even grandparents know how to use QR codes now. So the actual really difficult piece that I learned was two distinct pieces is attribution and allocation of tips is really hard, and distribution in a framework which is tax compliant and financially compliant and also transparent is really, really difficult.
I mean, just the saying those words is difficult to hear, let alone managing.
It's difficult to say, to be honest.
Like,
I'm glad I've not had a few beers already. Allocation and attribution and distribution. So those are really difficult things to try and figure out. And so I was in a situation where I had a nice little business PDF business plan.
Everyone needs a PDF, my friend.
PDF business tip jar. And I trademarked the name Tip Jar. And I had an app that was ready for the bin, but it was actually a good demo. The value of it was a good demo. And I started going, do you know what? I really believe in this, and this is a real problem I want to fix. And I got quite emotionally attached to fixing the problem, probably because I never expected to have the career I've had and done the amazing thing in hospitality. And I feel like I've got a debt to the industry. And that's why you'll see me in like head of a pubs and other bits of pubs. I'm really passionate about the industry and I want to give back to it. And I wanted to try and fix this problem for people who were like me, and I didn't want them. I was getting the benefit of tips and instant liquidity of tips. I didn't want people who are working 10, 15 years after me not to have that benefit. So I stuck with it, and I was pitching different restaurateurs, and I met a lovely chap called Alex Moore from Rose's Thai Cafe.
Great brand.
And he is kind of interesting timing, actually. I think he's going to talk about this in the future. He talked about it a bit in public already, but he'd done a really nice thing where, I don't know the exact details of it, where he effectively, in Thai culture, it's like they're very respectful and they want to show gratitude and publicly show gratitude for how hard it was. And they had one of their original employees who was their trunk master.
Yeah.
They actually, as a debt of gratitude, they wanted to make him the company secretary. You actually don't need a company secretary nowadays, but they made that person a company secretary, which actually invalidated their trunk scheme just by a paperwork exercise.
Yeah.
And it meant that they got a big fine from HMRC, and he was particularly pained on tips at the time and was like, if I'd have had this system we were talking about potentially building, this would have completely insulated me from that, and we'd have been in a much better place. So what we did was he was really keen really quickly, and he said, but you know what, I don't want to invest until we've kind of done a bit of a beta test, so let's kind of like get some stuff together and do a beta test. So he had a restaurant in Covent Garden called Lau Cafe, still there, I think. We literally went in with QR codes and literally a questionnaire that said, if you were tipping digitally, what would you pay? How much would you tip? Would you cover fees? Would you asking questions about how things would work? And effectively, it was like a whatever before an alpha test is. I don't know, like super early, like customer, I suppose you'd call it a customer survey, effectively, yeah. a customer like, exploration of what would happen. And the feedback was great, and people said, yeah, listen, they were dead into it. They wanted the real clear outcome of that was that they wanted the money to go to the employees. They wanted transparency. It was a really good example because there was a lot of kind of both British and residents of the UK, but also a lot of tourism going to this Covent Garden. So we got a really...
That's why I thought that was interesting that you said Covent Garden.
A broad spectrum of people. So it was really interesting. And we did it for like a week or so, and it was good. And we were all there, like, hovering over you while you did your survey. Maybe that helped.
It's my future, if you wouldn't mind just ticking that box.
Anyway, so it went well, and Alex invested the next day, and we put together this crack team of people. So we had... So from day one... day one of the new world where I'd realised it wouldn't be fixed with a 10 grand app and it was a much bigger problem. £4 million later of investment, we're still working on it. But we needed to build a financial institution. So we basically went out and got a guy called Paul Stancer and Ben Thomas, who are my two co-founders. And Paul Stancer is probably, we don't let him speak to that many people because he's always busy on coding, but he's like, he built Carrefour's point system, okay. Clubcard system. He worked for ASOS, he worked for Barclays, interestingly enough, because across the road, it was probably the origin of our story. But he built like World Remit, which is an international money trader. So he's like a weapons grade.
You've got him locked in a cupboard.
Weapons grade bank builder, right? Like, wow. And that's what we need to in quite quickly when you realize the number of transactions and then splits and then allocations and hourly divisions. And then all of a sudden, those numbers and those maths become quite challenging. So you need a really serious bit of kit to do it. So we started there. We met great people at Honest Burger, and they're like, I can't talk more about how great employers and how connected those founders are to their people.
Yeah, they get it, don't they?
They just really get it, you know. Yeah. And like, I love speaking to Phil about like his vision. He's got so much stuff going on,
He's doing some interesting stuff.
He's doing some really interesting stuff, and I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it, but
no,
he's in space. But he's doing really
stuff. This is very cool.
He loves hospitality like me, and he understands the importance of people in hospitality. I think that's a key thing. And they were really keen to get a tipping system into their business, a tipping system. It didn't have to be a technology. It just had to be a better way of allocating and driving tips and rewarding their team in the business and like make sure they had skin in the game. So October 2019, this was by this point. So we'd done our alpha test. We'd done a couple of trial sites, and Honest Burger guys wanted to. So we did... 10 site trial with Honest Burger. We doubled the amount of tips they got. Staff were happier. Yes, it could be like, it's like any initial product. It could have been better.
Of course.
They logged into a website and they could draw the money down, and like, there was no app at that time for staff. And it was kind of pretty rudimentary. And then they were liking it so much that they were like, listen, we want to roll out everywhere. So we signed our first commercial contract in January 2020. And we had our first employee.
Something's coming.
Yeah. We had our first employee.
They really say 2020, everyone goes, God, here we go.
So January 2020 was like when we all lived in this kind of false world of amazing.
I was talking to we were doing some leadership training for Whistlepunks the last couple of days. Yeah. And I was talking to the founder, Jules, and he was saying, we were just talking about something. He said, it's just another new normal. He just said to me, there's so many of them. He said, I've just...
The new normal.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
So January 2020, we had a first employee, Anita. You know Anita well. She's like a life and soul tip jar, like definitely the face of our business.
Cut her in the middle. Tips fall out.
Not other people's tips, her tips. Yeah. Just because there's no stealing going on here. So we were in this kind of weird position where we just had a commercial contract. We're about to roll out an Honest Burger. And then we were like, great. What a great first client. They get it, they love it. Amazing. We're building it for them. They had like really specific needs. Like they were moving chefs between locations. Like we were doing like every half an hour, a chef would like musical chair to another location. And we had to track that person, make sure they got the right amount of tips.
That's even difficult, right? Because I know in Fourth World, they won't mind mentioning, when I worked at Carluccio's, it's very hard then to move. We moved a lot of employees centrally in London.
It's about tracking them and stuff like that.
And it's very hard.
And like, so we knew that was a really important part. It was an operator, and especially air managers get the brunt of this. It's like, I've got a really busy restaurant there, and a lot of what you do is about allocation of resources. It could be that I need burgers, I need chips, whatever it might be. And it's like, and I live this in my career as well. It's like, it's about moving people to the right place to maximize what you can get that day. And they've got to do it. And what they can't do is say, oh, can you go down and work at that really busy restaurant, but you're going to miss out on your tips?
Yeah, you'll just
crap.
And I'll catch you up another time.
I let you go home. Whatever it might be, it's like the trade-off is really poor there for the employee. And it's like, actually, the employee wants to go and help because they're a great business like Honest Burger. They love working there. And they want to grow their careers and be good at what they do. And if they can help out, to penalise them for it was wrong. So we built a system to track that, and that worked really well. And that has really helped us. Fixing that problem early on really helped us. So get to March, just about to roll out, and obviously the world fucking turns upside down. Am I allowed to swear? Actually, is that okay?
Yeah, man, you're talking about this podcast.
I'll keep it vanilla for now. So to be fair, it was a pretty extreme event in the world, so it probably deserves
it. It deserves that.
So the world turns upside down, and we were like, okay, we had $100,000 of investment, and we'd hardly spent any of it because everyone was working for free on the system. Yeah. We had Anita as an employee, and told Anita this is like, we're just gonna have to mothball this, and when this is all blown over in 6 weeks' time, we'll come back and deal with it. And anyway, so with Anita, we were literally days away from saying, "Listen, I'm really sorry." And she worked for the past.
What a mistake that would have been!
A mistake or just painful, like necessity is probably what. So we were days away from that. Anita came through the door with a fish in her mouth and said, "I've signed Yard Sale Pizza. They stayed open during COVID." And they need someone for their tips. And I was like, thank God for that. So what we ended up doing was building, like everyone did, pivot's the wrong word because we always had delivery and asking, but we ended up building a different product first, which was...
Yeah, because you're iterating anyway,
the delivery product. So they were great. They had their own technology managing the delivery, their own website. So we just put a link on it and said, hey, do you want to leave a tip? And my God, during COVID, those drivers were earning a lot of money. We were like, should we go and be a driver in Yard Sale Pizza? Because it was good. And it like, I had a notification on my phone every time someone tipped, and it used to like buzz a couple of times a day. And during COVID, because we had a couple of customers on, but when Yard Sale went on, I lived around the corner from Yard Sale Pizza in Finsbury Park, and I would test on a regular basis for work purposes, obviously. And it was just really reassuring to see my phone tick away and every time someone tipped.
That's such a common story about people who've got, I mean, generally e-commerce, not in tips normally, but that notification
comes in.
I've got something from a website now actually that tells me every time someone's bought. It tells me, and it's great. It tells me where they are, what they're doing. And we talked about EXP at the start actually. That validation, I remember our validation of selling our first ticket actually.
Yeah. Someone wants
pounds.
To come.
And I was I said to Kieran,
it's my relative.
And he said, who bought it? He went, who cares? I was like, that someone's actually said they like our lineup and they come in. And I remember how proud you were putting out those. You had Little Honest Burger tent cards. Yeah. And it wasn't you and a team of people, right? It was you putting them out on the tables. And you said, oh, do you mind if I put. And I just think that's so cool. And Zong there from Deliverette that day as well. And look what they've done. It's just, I think it just shows the test of character and product actually to get through what we got through or what you got through over those couple of years. Because it was huge, right? Because it's not just, you know, the not knowing. I know there's always opportunity in those crises, but it's actually the navigating that and hanging on to the needs of this world and making sure that you kind of push forward.
We're so glad that we were able to do that. And I think that, like, again, Anita was like out in COVID, like sticking QR code boxes, QR codes to pizza boxes for them and stuff like that, and like being part of their team. And it just worked really well. And I think, like, fast forward to now, where we now signed the biggest pizza delivery company in the UK, Domino's and Papa John's.
I see you regularly, my friend. Yeah, I see you regularly.
Like, and there are people that text me and go, I just ordered Domino's. I see you on TikTok. I was like, yeah. So we're really proud of that. And like that origin story of like us surviving during COVID allowed us to build a business. But actually, like, you know what? We could probably build a business just from handling delivery drivers' tips here, because it's a complicated thing to deal with. Even more complicated when those drivers are free are self-employed or freelance, whatever you want to call it. Because passing money to them is quite difficult, and like it's a really interesting dynamic and model when you've got franchisees that are trying to pass money from a franchise website down to an employee or a freelance worker of another company.
I find tech is so cool for simplifying.
Yeah, so we just simplified it. It just goes directly between you and the driver, right? So you can look the driver in the eye in Domino's and go, I just tipped you £2, and they know they've got it. And like I text the tip jar team this like maybe 2 months ago, but we were going away. I was driving somewhere on the Monday. So on a Sunday night, I was like, I went to fill up my car because I just wanted to get out and go on the road. And I drove into the petrol station near my house, and there was two Domino's, two small cars that had, like, young guys' first
car. Little triangles on the roof.
Yeah. And it, like, literally as I was filling my car, I saw them, and we ended up going inside. And there was a problem with the payment when we went inside. So we were all in the queue for a long time. And I was like, do you know what I'm going to say? I said, guys, how long you worked for Domino's for? And they said, one guy was like, they're, I don't know, a year and had two years, something like that. Another guy was like 8 months. I was like, oh, have you got a tip jar account? And one guy goes, oh yeah, I've got the app on my phone, it's great. And the other guy was like, yeah, I've got it, I don't have the app, but they'd drawn down the money from their tip jar account to pay for their petrol that night.
Wow.
And I was like, so that was really cool. And then like, I was like, they were like, oh, how do you know tip jar? I was like, well, I was like really embarrassed. I kind of started thinking, they're like, no way. And they got a selfie with me and all that stuff, and it's quite cool. And like, and I was a bit embarrassed in my local petrol station, but it's those moments that kind of really make it work. And like that business is great for us, and I think we're just about to have collected over £1 million of tips for those guys.
Tech on Toast is pleased to announce that HRC Hotel, Restaurant and Catering is returning to London on the 25th and the 27th of March 2024 at the XL. Discover game-changing trends, network with industry leaders, and explore cutting-edge solutions that will elevate your business. Mark your calendars for an unforgettable experience at HRC, as this is where the future of hospitality unfolds. Don't miss out. To find out more, check out the website www.hrc.co.uk. Back to the chatting.
Tips for those guys.
That's insane. But it hasn't come with it. It's not been easy, right? Because, and you very quickly mentioned the word trademark earlier on in the conversation about Tip Jar. And we had a discussion off air prior to you coming on. And you talked about, you went through, should we call it a process? Yeah. Is that too small a word?
Oh yeah, it's like, it's a while. So I need to make sure, if I'm telling it, I get all the right bits. So, with any startup, you do a lot of chats and pitches, and I just happened to be in a hotel. Where was I? I think I was in London, actually, in a hotel in London, and I was pitching two really serious founders of a really successful internet company in America about investing in Tipjar, and I was like, these things aren't that glamorous. So I literally had upturned the bin on top of the desk to get the right angle in a room so it looked professional. It wasn't like in a kind of tiny hotel room. And we're talking about it, and they went, we're on the Twitter board, and I'm pretty sure we're releasing a product called Tipjar soon. And I was like, nah, like I don't think so. We own the trademark. And he's like, okay, well, maybe it's called something else. We agreed to kind of like, it was just a miscommunication. Yeah. And literally the next day, Alex Moore texts me this kind of link saying, oh, listen, there's rumors go around that Twitter are going to launch a product called TipJar, and you could like monetize your tweets and take money via your Twitter thing. And I was like, I replied back, going, no, remember, we own the trademark. We owned it in UK, Europe, and we were like in process in America.
Yeah.
And we'd actually done a lot of work. Someone actually owned the Tipjar trademark from 1990 in America, and it was for a music website, and they'd not used it, and they tried to do a startup, and they'd not used it, and it was effectively dormant. And we actually had to, sounds a bit devious, but I'm told it happens all the time, and the story I'm about to tell will explain that. But we actually had to hire a private investigator to pose as a journalist to interview the person that owned the trademark, them to go on record and say, oh no, I don't use that anymore, to get it struck off.
Yep.
So they got it struck off, and then we'd applied to be in. So we were like in the queue, we'd been assessed, and the other one was struck off. So we were like, there was a clear path to getting it. And the only way to not get it would be like an objection and an invalid claim on a trademark. You couldn't trademark the term, which we know we could. So we're all lined up, and literally a week later, I actually had a holiday at the time, and it was really, really painful because I ruined my holiday. BBC News, it was a big thing. They did a real big PR tweet about it, and they had loads of like Twitter influencers talking about it. And this was like, it must have been 2020, like maybe.
Was it pre-pandemic or was it?
No, it was during the pandemic, but it was that where we probably like probably eat out to help out time maybe.
Right, okay. We'd just come out of that first wave.
I think
wave. So.
I didn't think about the dates, but it was around about that time. And I got this notification, and then I got friends texting me going, oh, I see you've done a deal with Twitter. I was like, no, it's not me. And it was just a really emotional time. It was like someone was taking something from it. And they'd called it Tipjar. It was capital T, capital J, space, but that doesn't matter. And I was really confused. And I was like, how could a big company do this? What's the process happening? So I did like a typical, like naive founder thing to do, go straight on Twitter with our Twitter account replied to their and I was saying, hey, you should probably talk to them about this, we own the trademark. And I was having people like trolling me going, you're never gonna get it in the last life. So I was like in a pretty dark place about it. So at this point we had even less money than we had before COVID, and any clients we did have were like either about to pay us or due to pay us at some point in the future, because we were building stuff at the time. And I was googling like IP lawyer for equity and stuff like that. Like, I was like that desperate, like, who can I get to that will do this for like...
Whilst on holiday.
Which I can trademark equity in a startup for someone that's going to work for me. It was that painful. So anyway, I found this great guy, and he didn't want equity in the end, but we found a great guy, and he'd helped us a little bit in the past. And you know what? He was like super switched on and really helped us. We looked at it a lot. He spoke to a lot, got a lot of advice, and was like, we wrote to Twitter and they ignored us. And he's like, listen, the advice is you got to quickly, all the markets you don't have, let's get trademark applications in. So I'm telling you now, there's not a country in the world where I don't own Twitter. I'm not kidding you. Saudi Arabia, I even own it in Russia. So a waste of money that is. But I own the trademark, whether I ever go there, or wherever that opens up again, I own it in.
And where did they think they owned it at this point?
They didn't own any trademark.
It was really
clear they didn't own any trademark. We looked up. So we started getting all our applications in. So we already owned it in Europe, in UK, and we were in pipe in the US. And we had really clear guidance that we were going to get in the US as well. So we started getting that. And he's like, the second part of the strategy is we're going to go to Germany. I was like, in the middle of COVID. He's like, yeah. He's like, we're going to go to Germany. And the best way to go about this, the quickest and cheapest country to do this in, where they have a fair view of this kind of activity, is Germany. So we went to court in Germany, and Twitter still didn't speak to us at that point, but they got summoned to court, and they put in a defence, all the rest of it, and we read the defence. And we came out of that first court session where a German court in Munich, and they told us that, we own the trademark. It was a complete, clear violation of our trademark, and a really great ruling, actually. Like, our lawyer couldn't believe how good it was. It said anybody in Germany could not see the term tip jar on the Twitter site in Germany.
Wow.
Any German citizen outside of Germany can't see it, and anyone who's a non-German citizen coming through Germany can't see it as well. And for every instance...
You're that judge of beer.
Every instance of violation was a 250,000 euro fine.
Wow.
Every instance. So my lawyer was like, I can't believe you've won this. And also we got awarded costs as well. So we got our costs covered. So our legal costs covered to a level. It didn't quite cover all, but to a level.
Yeah.
So at that point, and I learned a lot about the situation. At that point, we got given, what was it called? Some kind of legal term where you could you get a notification and you've got 30 days to serve that notification, which would effectively enact that ruling.
Yeah.
And I was like, serve it. And the lawyer was like, wait, don't serve it yet. Don't serve it yet. I was like, serve it. Because he's like, if you serve it and you've not given them time to react, it's worthless anyway. So very smart advice. He's like, let's see what happens. So straight away, we got contacted. This is a lot later on, and I was on holiday again. It sounds like I'm on holiday all the time. It's time to be on holiday. And it's like,
feels like there's a trend.
Yeah, I think it was a weekend. And it wasn't a weekend. It was a couple days away. And then he's like, Twitter wanted to talk. I was like, great, I'll jump on a call, Zoom call. And I was like on a sun lounger somewhere. And I was like, so I jump on a Zoom call, and really nice but smarmy lawyers came on the call, and they offered me a lot of money for the trademark because they wanted it, and they knew our position in Europe and the US, and they saw all our other applications, and we knew they might do, so I was prepared for something. It was a lot of money, and some days I think that like a lot of money, and
especially considering where you were at that point.
Yeah, the world had got a bit better at that point, but one of the challenges we've had was that Tipjar, our name was really strong for our product, right? If we're going to build a global brand, a bank that does this, Tipjar's a really good name, and we had backup names ready, and we could have taken that money and changed the backup name. They were nowhere near as good, and we had backup names ready, and we could have done a deal, and we could have funded the business that way, but it wasn't enough. For the value of the name was higher based on our trajectory, where we wanted to be, where we wanted to go. So I actually turned around and said, each time's about 10, and I want a 5-minute meeting with Jack Dorsey as a counter offer.
Yeah.
And then told me to go whistle. But you know what? That's fine, because they could have come back in times by 2 and we could have considered it, and like I could have got no meeting with Jack. But like, I wanted to meet Jack Dorsey because he obviously involved in like POS with Square and stuff. I was like, what's the way I could pitch him my idea in 5 minutes and he could tell me to get lost, or what's the worst going to happen? And they said no. They then immediately, as soon as they said no, they appealed the decision in Germany, so it cost me more money. So I had to go back to German court and appeal, and we had to fight that. And they also objected I don't know if I can say this, but they objected to our trademark in the US, which my personal view was they were on erroneous grounds. There's no validation to the objection other than the fact that they didn't want me to get the trademark in the US.
Do you think because you were small at this point that they were just trying to play big brother?
On the call where they offered me money, they also told me that my position was really weak and how they could win it. So what they said, so we had a weakness in the case, which was there was a company in another country who had a trademark previously, which wasn't the same, but it had similar letters in it, and it would have it gone into administration and gone bust, and effectively the government of that country owned that, and they could have gone and bought the company and resurrected it, and it would have been a valid trademark. And that's really fucking mean, you know? So they would have to go and found their old directors. And we did a bit of research on it and all the rest of it. So, and like, we could also go and have done that, but we would never be able to do it. The funny thing is when we first went into legal battle, I was Googling lawyers for equity, which was a really bad plan.
Everyone's Googling lawyers for equity right now.
There's not many sensible ones anyway. And I was also, I Googled like their cash positions. I looked up their accounts and it's like they had 4.3 billion cash in the account. And I just looked at us and we had less than 50. I was like, yeah, I think we're going to lose this one. Great strategy and legal tech. So we went back. So where do we get to? So we went back. So they objected to US and they went back to appeal. Won the appeal, obviously, in Germany. And at the time of appeal, I was a bit annoyed by this point, so I actually paid someone to completely search their entire website for instances, and we found loads of instances where they don't actually complied with the citation to say to change it. So we basically grassed them up to the German court.
Stitches get stitches, JB.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And as a bit of a kind of power blow. So we found instances in Germany on a German IP address of people seeing that
because right at this point they're not, well, not that they're not in the detail, but because they're so big,
maybe
they're obviously just presuming that you guys are going to fold.
Here's the question. So they didn't answer the question, and I wouldn't have answered if they asked me it. But I said to them, "Who in your team?" Because I was speaking to their kind of general counsel, and I think my lawyer was just like stressed that I was asking. He's like, "Let me speak," and I'm asking lots of questions. I'm like, "Who in your team didn't check the trademark?"
Yeah.
Or decided to go ahead and do it anyway. Because if they checked it, they would have known we existed because we were like, or and didn't do it. So, and they just declined to answer that question.
What do you think the answer was?
I don't know. And I'm not sure if they could, like, I suppose there's change ownership now. I don't think they really care. probably didn't check, is my gut feel. But
I agree.
I could never say that.
Can't
so,
prove it, yeah.
Where do we get to? So went to appeal, they got a fine, got more costs, and they lost the appeal. And then we spoke to the US trademark. They were like, we're going to scrub this objection of theirs, and we're going to move forward. And we moved forward, we got the trademark in the US. And now literally every day I get an email saying, you now own the trademark of TipDrop in Bhutan. It's like, you're like, God, why did we do that? Like, it wouldn't be like, so... Yeah, we own it, and I can't even count the number of countries.
That's
like,
huge, and that's all going on. Obviously, you're not under embargo, but you haven't been able to chat about it. Really,
no, not to chat at all. I've got this like really like when we got the first ruling through that said like, Tipjar versus Twitter and my name on it and other senior famous people around the world on it, and it said like a win for me, and it was like it was a German document, but it translated. My lawyer just sent it to me and saying this is one for the fridge, and that's. I've got it framed in my... Like,
let's move my PGCSE on the screen. You've got Twitter versus James.
So we're really... And like, I suppose it says to everyone, our investors, anyone else, that we really care about this topic and we care about getting it right, and we wanted to keep the name because we want to build a global platform, and this is a great brand for a global platform which handles the distribution and allocation of tips, no matter where they are.
I think it really shows off what you talked about right at the start about... actually wanting to do something and being a bit persistent, a bit of a pain in the ass with it, like you're not going to let it, a dog with a bone maybe. I think a lot of people, especially in 2020, 2021, even though you're running a great company and it's growing, may have looked at that money and thought, you know what, I could probably go, I'm a smart person, I could probably go and build something else and probably fund myself a little bit easier. But you did you? So
no, so sometimes I
you wanted to fight.
I think I feel like, it's such an, it's like, I was really emotional about it. Like, probably like the first interaction where I tweeted at them saying, hey, listen, you should talk to us. Like, it's a probably example where, and like great counsel from both investors and other people in the business and in Tipjar, but also from legal counsel and in different countries as well, was a really good grounding to say, because I was like, I'm going to go to the press about this. And they're like, no, don't do that. Because the minute you do that, you lose all your leverage.
Yeah. And it's a moral thing for you, right? Was it more than
that? Oh, I was so upset about it. Because anyone listening to this has started a business or had an idea of their own or know, you feel like someone's taken your baby.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of the branding and what it looked like and the name and the fact that we got the trademarks. I was like, it was just really a really emotional response. And I had to constantly check myself not to have an emotional reaction to that piece.
But it's why it's so cool to have good people around you, right? I think that's anybody who's in business who surround you. Everyone says surround yourself with great people, right? And I think whoever that, I don't know who the person was who was helping you legally, was supporting you, but they sound like an absolute...
They were awesome.
Yeah, rock star. Yeah, they were good. I mean, that's a story for one. There you go. That hasn't happened before on the podcast. Yeah. And actually, while you're there, I wanted to talk about the fact that the people involved, not just at Tipjar, actually. So we're in BrewDog today talking, and I spend a lot of time... here, thanks to you, actually.
In this lovely podcast studio.
Yeah, in your lovely studio. And, you know, and I'm forever grateful. And I think, but I generally bump into people, particularly here, I bump into Emily, who's just been promoted, who's assistant manager now, is that right? And Monica has also been promoted. She's running the sales team or doing sales and marketing here. And they are just two individuals that I find just engaging, work hard, love what they do. We had Monica joining us to judge the other day for Atollo. And then also in Tipjar, Anita and Ange, who I know from right at the start, I think. And just energy beyond. But genuinely believe in what they're doing. And I want to kind of say to everybody who's listening and people who do join in that actually when you run restaurants, tech, whatever you do, they are the things that move you. Is it? I mean, they're all connected to you in some way, right? I know you're not there. I mean, Anita and Ange are directly involved, I'm sure. But the BrewDog guys, I know you run multiple sites all over the world, so it's not like you're in managing doing a one-to-one with them every day.
I can take no credit for the amazing people who work in this part.
But there really are. To do that. What connection is there, do you think, between your success and the people you've been around? Because you've just, I mean, the Twitter story alone is actually another example of having great people around you that have helped you.
Yeah. I mean, hospitality is about people, right? And as much as location, product, and everything is about it, if you don't have the great people, it's not going to work. And I think that whenever I've been in an organization, people have always come, if not top, at the very kind of top of our consciousness and mindset, whether it's a package, how they're rewarded, and probably why I'm so passionate about Tipjar and how like the skin in the game element of, okay, if I do X, Y, and Z this way and behave in this manner, here's my result and here's my instantaneous reward.
Yeah.
And I think they're coming back to the tips. I think they're like service charge and lumps, like credit card tips that get a lump sum 60 days after the fact that your behavior's happened. There's no connectivity to it. It's like, for me, it's ruining hospitality. And albeit I understand the purpose of them and how important it is. And like, I'm very much pro-business in like how this all runs. But at the same time, to get the real benefit of that connectivity between employee, a server, employee, bartender, and customer, like them instantly knowing that they're getting rewarded or they've done a good job, and that constant instantaneous gratification of I've done a good job is really important. And I think the examples here, genuinely in BrewDog, I see the story you just told me about Emily and the team here is, I see it around the world. And I think that we're just really fortunate to have some incredible people who love beer, people who love working in a growing, fast environment. And you talked about both had promotions. Our company and the industry as a whole is littered with stories. Like I always talk about the guy who was like assistant manager at Newcastle Bar 7 years ago, now runs Asia, Australia.
It's just insane, isn't it?
A girl that used to be the host in Aberdeen now runs Ohio.
Yeah.
The bars in Ohio. Like we joke that we export beer and Scottish people around the world. but it's a bit more than Scottish people now, but as we get bigger and we grow around the world, but like stories of like we've got an incredible employee called Benny in Dogtap Berlin. We've got this huge venue in Berlin, like 2,500 capacity, actually bigger than here. Big garden, does huge events. Guy's a powerhouse of an operator. We open Brisbane, like it's gonna be busy. Who can do high volume food?
Get on the phone to Benny.
Benny, fancy a couple of weeks in Brisbane, and they love it, right? And I think
of course they do.
As an employer brand, we definitely talk about growth, opportunity, So actually, Emily bumped into me like a couple of months ago and said, "Hey, I'm going to California to see my friend. Any chance I could like pop by Las Vegas?" I'm like, "Do you know what? That's so good for us. We'll pay your flights, not all the way to California, but from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. Go and do 4 or 5 shifts in that bar. Connect to the manager. Manager, listen, Emily's great. Works in one of the biggest venues in London. She's got really good experience in this, this, and this. If you've got problems here, it's probably good to let her do that. Great experience for her. Great cultural connectivity for us. And we do stuff like that all the time. And like, I'm really proud of it. The team love it. It's one of the reasons they work here.
And it's one of the things that really pisses me off, actually, because you guys got some bad press, right? When was it? You caught it, I suppose.
Die by the sword, but
I think, and there's always a few, right? I mean, we've worked in brands all our lives, right, in hospitality brands, and I hear stuff like the McDonald's stuff came out, I think yesterday was on the news, and I was reading, and it's all shit and it sounds terrible.
I've not had time to look at it. I've not had time to look at it in any detail.
It's as you would imagine.
Because I have a bit of PTSD about reading that stuff.
I'm sure you do.
That was us for a while. Maybe not the exact same topics, but I think that there's a couple of things on this front. When literally the day before that stuff came out, I could have easily been invited to one of these conferences or panels or discussions to talk about how great we are with people, because profit share, real living wage for like 5 years. They get a week off for puppy. If they get a puppy, you name it.
I've had 12 puppies. But yeah,
people do. private medical care for everybody.
Yeah.
If you're in the US as a dishwasher, you get the same private medical care as the director.
Amazing.
And like, it's transformative. People like, I'm trying to get numbers. We are really passionate about people. So to hear that was a shock. It was really painful. There's a lot of kind of like, probably angry reaction, denial, and like emotional reaction from all directors at that point. And and if I'm honest, the team who actually currently worked in the business were also really angry about it, because it impacted them.
Of course,
and
it does.
What wasn't portrayed very well, and probably naively, I don't want to sound all like Joe Rogan conspiracy theory here, but naively before this incident, I was like, okay, well, you've got the Guardian and the Times, they're honest journalists, and like they're going to do things right, and they're going to produce things the right way. I came out from, and probably I'd put the BBC in that, and I'd say they're going to tell the story straight and give both sides. And I learned from that that's not necessarily the case. And what wasn't portrayed very well in the media was that it was predominantly ex-staff that worked for us.
Yep.
It wasn't actually current employees. Some were still current employees. We've got 4,000 staff around the world. Yeah, let's be honest here, some people are working in this business today who are unhappy. It's our job to try and fix that.
Mate, I ran a region of 48 sites.
Yeah,
and most,
yeah, and like your job as an operator, as manager, to find ways of making them happy, or in an instance where you can and it's just time to move on, help them see the light of going somewhere else. The reality was that we actually paid really well in all markets around the world. Benefits were great. It was actually really hard to leave our business because the grass wasn't always greener from a financial perspective elsewhere. And I think maybe in retrospect, looking back, maybe, and our turnover is like, say, below. Like, we've got like 40% turnover in our bars. If you look at the industry average, in places I've worked in the past, it was 110, 120%. Yeah, slapping a manager on the back for 80% turnover. Yeah. You're like, oh, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And we're like super low. Like, I walk into our Berlin bar, we opened it 5 years ago, I know all the employees.
But isn't that the thing with you guys that actually, because you are, because you're effectively a starter, you're not a, I know you're not a starter, but you know what I mean? That mentality.
We like to challenge ourselves not to think too big. So it's like, don't think like a big company, think like a small company.
Yeah.
Because if you think like a small company, you'll often do things right and you'll be connected to it. And often I talk to my team about, okay, don't make a big company decision. A big company would make a policy of like a book this thick of that topic. How about we just say, listen, let's all use our common sense here.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. And let's make it really clear.
And that's really hard, isn't it? Because you're giving license to the people to make some decisions.
Yeah.
You're breaking down those chains of decision-making, which I totally agree with. But with that, you're going to get things that go wrong, right? I mean, it's just, and it's why,
you
right?
Definitely get things that go wrong.
It's always the hospitality that gets picked. I just don't get it. Like, I'm surely in Ford Motors or somewhere else, right? They have these issues. They have stuff going on.
Because consumers, like, it's like, it's seen as this kind of like really interesting industry. I think people, so many consumers, the amount of times you must meet people say, oh yeah, I could quite like to run a restaurant. And you think, oh, you really wouldn't.
My friends still call me a chef. Like, generally, since I left school, like, oh, you're a chef still? I was like,
Kind of. I'm like a podcast chef.
Yeah.
I kind of mix.
Cooking up great episodes.
Salads, I'm mixing podcasts. But yeah, I think that like there's a general interest because it's hospitality, you know, and dining out and drinking out is just so part of people's lives.
Yeah, they're connected, aren't they?
And going back to my story about Coronation Street and EastEnders, it was a key part of that community.
Yeah.
And like it's always just been part of that for people's lives. And I think
yeah, the corner pub just got bigger, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool. Look, I mean, it's been fascinating and we could probably do 4 hours with you. What about what's going on with Tip Jar? So what's the future?
We're really busy and we're going to speak to loads of people. I suppose you name the company, pub company, we're talking to a restaurant group. So I suppose where we've evolved to from like day one, which is a QR code scanning app, to now we're completely integrated seamless systems where we can handle service charge. Tips, delivery tips. We take like we see ourselves as a bank for hospitality workers. So you get a Monzo type app, and probably should have mentioned this earlier, but some of the great advice we had over the time, especially with the trademark stuff, was a guy called Gary Dolman, who's one of the co-founders of Monzo. We convinced him to join our board and kind of give us guidance because we wanted to build a kind of Monzo for tipping. Was that kind of like internal mantra? Okay, well, it's really slick, really clear.
Great bank.
Yeah, great bank, and like really well thought out, and like we want to be like that, but for tipping, so that you can just get it in. We're currently speaking to people like MasterCard and Visa about launching a debit card so you can literally get tipped and then clock out and tap your phone on it. Like, that's the utopia for me. How do I get the employees of today the same experience I had, which was like bucket of money, pour on the thing, divide it up, transparency, spend instantly. So that's what we're working towards, really, really close to that. We've got some really great conversations going on with people like US Bank and Elavon and Dojo and all these companies that are doing all this stuff. Exact payment stuff, but tipping is a headache for everybody. If you speak to anyone, they pull their hair and go, oh, tips.
I was right. The question is thinking, oh, I don't really want to get into that.
Yeah, so it's hard work. And like the new legislation, there's a lot of different opinion about it. I think the staff benefit.
Is it different by state there, just out of interest, like in the US?
It's different by state, different by state, and sometimes even different by restaurant type and service type and all the rest of it. So, I think the states, because it's such an important part of their income, I think they've probably broadly got it aligned. There's definitely more alignment that the employees get it, and there's definitely less funny business going on, I believe.
It's really seen as, when I worked over there, it's part of your salary.
It's also brand suicide to do anything dodgy with tips in the US, whereas I think it's less brand suicide here, albeit it's getting that way. And I don't sign up to this Daily Mail narrative of every restaurateur is at it and doesn't want to give their staff tips. There are a few bad eggs and past bad eggs.
Similar to the last conversation we just had, let's just pick on, whoever.
I've been on hospitality, but I, what I do believe is that it could be better. And I think operators, like, you're getting loads of transaction level detail on a credit card machine that was designed in the 1980s, 1990s, 2000s. And the staff have got skin in the game of that. Therefore, they want to know they want to see what's happening. And we did some really interesting research with Cam Media where they'd like asked 1,000 staff, I think it was, that like, what was your thoughts on this? And 84% of people said that they didn't really believe they were getting a fair share of their credit card tips because they couldn't see that what's happening. Because it's really important for, I'm going to say really old here, but modern staff to understand what's happening. People predisposed to think they're getting raw deals, maybe a natural human trait. And you've got to give them that transparency piece. So with TipJar, they see every single transaction, they see what's going on. For me, that's just really important as part of the process. They have this kind of like financial Monzo type product for. So, yeah, whether it be a Domino's style business or a fine dining restaurant, we can handle. We've built a product for everyone. Cafe, we've got tap to tip boxes. We integrated PDQ machines. The new legislation, we're legislation ready. And we've hired this really great guy called Andy Herman from KPMG, who's like director of tax and other things at KPMG. And
sounds frightening.
Yeah, I know. It feels like.
I don't want to meet him. He'd be asking me questions.
Anyone that ever knew me at school, any of my teachers knew that I'd hired someone director from KPMG would like fall over laughing with no chance. But he's really good. And like, he's like the authority on tipping. And he's really good. We offer him out free and like call out to anyone on the podcast. I think if you want advice from Andy on new tipping legislation, I'm happy to do that.
It's going to be ringing.
If you're an operator listening to this, like the new legislation, there's no doubt you're going to have to change. Very few businesses are compliant with the nuts and bolts of the legislation. Like things like agency workers have to get tips, the new legislation.
Do you see that as a bit of your role then? Not your role, JB, but like TipJar's role, that actually you're going to have to help educate and inform a little bit around this as well.
Yeah, it's part of that process. I think that some businesses are going to probably know legislation because they're busy and I understand that, and they've got bigger fish to fry, and I think that at some point it's going to come for them. I think they're going to, with all new legislation, they don't put it in and don't enforce it.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on this process. There's a consultation process going through or starting soon about the kind of code of practice based on the new legislation, what to do and what not to do. A big one is people, there's a couple of kind of key cornerstones of the kind of bill. And I suppose I am an expert, but I'm no expert like Andy. But so for me, as an operator, the summary is agency workers have to get a fair share of tips. That's a headache for us to figure out, but we're speaking to like people like Stint and stuff. How do we, yeah, and Limber and all those people say, how do we fix this? We need to fix this together because it's a problem for you, a problem for us, and it's a problem for our joint customer.
Yeah.
The other one is that staff are effectively going to get, it's not called this, but it's effectively a bill of rights for staff where they get to ask for a transaction level detail. They have to get paid the money within 30 days of it being tipped, so no matter what the payroll process is. And another big one, there was like no group level pooling of tips. So people, yeah, who are collecting service charge in London and paying staff an extra hourly rate in Milton Keynes or somewhere like that is not acceptable anymore. And I think that's a fundamental shift.
When does this come into play?
It's been signed into legislation already, and there's obviously debate, but they reckon probably sometime next March, and plus it's very linked to tax, and might be maybe April's a good time to do it. There's no real clear definition yet. I think a lot of it will do to the timing and process around code of practice, and then there'll be some kind of, I don't know the answer to this, but I'm saying what my view is.
Yeah.
The code of practice will be consulted on, delivered, and then published, and there'll be like from this date. It'll be, but if I, like, every operator of any scale has started to budget for next year, starting to think about what does the process look like. If you're going to have to budget a change, you're going to have to figure out your economic model for your P&L.
Because you need to run into that, right? You need a runway, don't you? You can't just like wake up next March.
I think you do. I think that I suppose I see this from like a couple of different angles. Obviously, I run a big organization and I understand those kind of pain points. It's a bit like when Hilton or a big company like that, a big hotel company would have charged for Wi-Fi, and all of a sudden they actually need to get that off the P&L because they can't charge for Wi-Fi anymore.
Yeah.
And like, but it seems to be part of the package. I think it's what one of those problems where is my view on it. And I think the businesses have to plan and prepare for that. But also there's going to be like fundamental shifts in contracts. There's a lot of any kind of people, HR consultants out there should be jumping all over this and saying, hey, we need to, like, it's going to be for small businesses and medium-sized businesses and large businesses, it's going to be a real change, and you're going to have to make sure you're compliant and you've looked at your processes and are they compliant. And I think that there's going to be a lot of press around it, so staff are going to be holding you to account on
that.
Well,
that was my final point going to be, actually, that it's never really the HMRC and everyone's going to be chasing you first. It's going to be the guys on the floor, right? Or in the car, wherever they may be.
We get it all the time. We're a real living wage employer, and the real living wage, like, people produce their results, and immediately our team will produce a new rate and says that's valid from next May. This is and we actually deliver it earlier than the deadline. But our team are always like, you meant to be living wage. And I'm like, okay, and we explain it. But like, I think that's the same with this legislation. I think that people are going to see the legislation, going to see the press, but they already have.
Well, yeah, because it's a benefit.
And they're going to see, actually, you're not. And I think that some businesses out there are probably going to wait to the last day. And I understand why they have to do that, because they've got to pay the bills, they've got to stay afloat. And I'm very pro business in everything I do, but at the same time, I'm also pro-employee, and I believe in the people power of enabling your employees and giving them skin in the game.
We just talked about it, right? Those guys, without the four that we mentioned, and everyone else who works around you, I'm sure that these things don't happen just by chance, right? As you say, you can have great product, great venue, great location, but you just need the dudes and the ladies to make it happen. And it's been great. And I thoroughly enjoyed coming here. If people want to get hold of you about TipJar and they want to kind of reach out, or should I send them to Anita?
Anita@wearetipjar.com.
Did you just tip Anita's email out? Yeah, yeah. Love that.
She's fine. She doesn't get enough emails. But yeah, listen, website's easy. Like, on our website, like, you have all the different products. Like, we literally have a solution for everyone. If you're just a delivery business, if you are like a Domino's, if you are find any restaurant, we can deal with every aspect of that. And what we want to do is, and my commitment to customers actually is, I'm never gonna diversify. The amount of times people have said to me, "Oh, you should take the whole bill, you should do payments."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no.
Payments must be. Is payments not a temptation?
Not at all. Right. Because I'm telling you now, it's in my blood to fix this problem.
Right. Okay.
And I want to build. I want to be really narrow and deep. And I want to be. So, like, I get people all the time. I got one last night saying, my friend was in France and they saw this thing. I was like, no, that's just a pay table app, and you can do it. So we actually work with pay table apps really well. So we integrate to them. So people like Sunday, Mr. Yum, like, they're part of the equation now, and I think they're an important part of the equation. And I think that in certain situations, they really elevate the guest experience, and customers want to tip during those profiles, but those businesses and those technology platforms. But we're just a we're the tip pot, which everything falls into.
Yeah.
And that's how we.
So your partner network's huge right now.
Yeah, it's a partner network's huge, and there's and we partner with POS with handheld terminals. We're like the people that pick up the money, and we're like the FedEx or Amazon delivery driver for the money, right? So we pick it up, we get it to the right people, and we make sure they get it as quickly as possible.
It's a great way of explaining it.
And often people misunderstand that. We don't really care how the money's collected, we just care about the employee getting the money.
Yeah, the end result.
And it's almost like tipping as a service, like kind of like a technology platform that allows you to plug in all your current systems and get the money to the right people in a transparent manner. And I don't like advertising this a lot, but we are building the bank for hospitality workers. Debit cards, you asked me what we're up to. Like, we want to launch the first pension from tips. Speaking to a partner about that. We want to launch products and savings. We've had people on, like, this is a bonker story, but we've had people on our platform who've saved for deposit on a house on TipJar.
It's mental.
We're not meant to allow them to do that because they're not allowed to save on the platform. We actually clear everyone out automatically. Every month, if you've got a balance on our system, we force the money into your bank account every month, whether you like it or not. What these two sisters actually did was they effectively, every time we tried to force them money, they basically put a fake bank account number in. That would be completely stressful for me in case you got the real bank account number. Yeah. So they found a loophole in the system. So we now don't let that happen. But they basically found a loophole where they just would put a false bank number in that they knew wouldn't work. Really highly stressful for me.
Because we should hire those people. They sound smart.
And they basically ended up having this big balance. And we were like, looking at where's the balance? And then we figured out what they were doing. By the time they're like, listen, they wrote to us and said, listen, we need a letter for our mortgage provider to see where this money came from, and we wrote them a letter. But like, seeing that user experience and like replicating it for them, the biggest request we get is, don't pay me, I want to save this money.
Yeah.
And investment, we're never going to build investment tools or we want to partner with best in class pension schemes, all the rest of it, and allow people to effectively use those financial products in that way.
Wow. And where's the end? What's the end, JB? Where does it finish?
There is no end.
What is your ultimate aim to finishing? To completing your mission? The first variation of
people
your mission.
People ask me this question all the time, and investors hate this answer. They really do hate this answer. If someone offered me a large check.
That's lucky, I got no money.
Yeah, a large check. And if you offered me a large check and like low level success, or no check and to be the platform that handles tips around the world and be the guy that fixed this problem, I would take the fix this problem.
I think you've already proved that, right? With the story in the middle there.
Maybe. The check that I was imagining for that was much larger.
Oh,
was
that right?
It was a large amount of money either way, but I don't do this for money. Like, in fact, for a lot of this time, I've had to top up the business. Startups know this, the people listening have done this. You have to put money into the business, and still to this day, sometimes you have to put money
into
the business.
Yourself.
You have to back yourself. And if I was sat in a large part of money, if I went at a lottery win just now, I would pour all the money into fixing TipJar.
Love that.
To making it a bit and fixing it.
And are you seeing your family anymore? Any more than you were? Because obviously there's a new arrival.
Yeah. Great. I have a really good work-life balance. And James Watt and I, the founder of BrewDog, talk about times. Like, we call it work-life integration.
And bloody integration.
Exactly. It's probably a tech
phrase. Perfect for this podcast, but yeah.
Work-life integration is like, sometimes the family come on the road with me, sometimes it's a lot of FaceTimes, and sometimes I'm at home but I'm working at night. Like, obviously, Vegas is the most challenging time zone for me, actually, because you've got to have energy. It's the end of a day for you. I usually start early. Yeah. And then, so I sometimes catch them when they're on a close. Like, if the manager's on a close, I catch them and I'll text and chat and I'll catch a message and stuff. It's such a big business for us. I'm very involved in like the day-to-day of that particular business. And so usually it's like, I have to get my one interaction with them either in a few days or even sometimes a week. I'm at like my lowest ebb in terms of like energy. That gave my points like 7 or 8 at night. And sometimes everyone's asleep and I'm jumping upstairs to my office and like, I'll just do it. And the manager there likes to chat. So it's like an hour later I'm downstairs, but I enjoy that element of it. And like, I find myself very, very fortunate to be in a position where I enjoy everything I do. And I wouldn't change anything for the world right now. And I know a lot of people who don't love their jobs, and I just find myself fortunate. I never planned to be here. I worked in a chip shop, and I went to a biochemistry degree.
But I think it starts there.
I found myself here, right?
Yeah.
And it was I just liked being in an environment, a social environment, and I liked working with people, and I liked a job where you could be out and effectively get a free social life at the same time, and you could be part of something. And it was like, but it's probably part of belonging. It's why people join clubs. It's why people do all the things they do around the world. And I just happened to join the hospitality club, and it's been amazing for me. And I'm just really fortunate to be here.
Love that. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure seeing you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for joining us in your lovely venue.
Thank you.
And we shall see you soon. You can contact JB. Go and find tipjar.com.
Yeah, no, we are tipjar.com. The guy that owns tipjar.com is another issue, and he wants $2 million.
Oh, God.
He wants $2 million and 20% of equity.
See you in court, my friend.
So far, we've said no. But one day I'll get tipjar.com.
What's yours then, tipjar?
We are tipjar.com.
We are tipjar.com.
I'll get it one day. I promise I'll get it.
Lovely. Okay. Thanks, JB.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Cheers.